TGIF and welcome to Arts, not live, but still local. I'm Cindy Price, sitting in for Carol Newman. Four innovative and creative men today. We talk with Astoria Library Director Jimmy Pearson and artist Morrison Pierce. But first, we're going to hear from high school arts teachers Brian Vollner from Warrenton and Mickey Cherugino from Astoria. Brian is the art department at Warrenton High School. A self-described color and pixel enthusiast, his classes in art and graphic design, including digital imaging, offer students a chance to take their focus off right or wrong answers and explore the world in their own creative, unique styles. Mickey Cherugino teaches pottery, art, drawing, and design at Astoria High School. His 2018 community art class designed and painted the bright green scaled dragon with a red fin mural honoring Chinese culture next to Children's Park at 6th and Commercial in Astoria. I went to both of the Astoria and the Warrenton High School websites, and I had a chance to look up sort of the timeline of how you got here. It was really very interesting. I'm interested to hear what was going on in your classrooms, in your heads, perhaps in other sort of just school meetings, because things happened so fast. What was the reaction amongst the teachers and the students at that point? Mickey?
You know, looking back at it, the weirdest thing was that decisions that usually seem to take a long time just got so compressed and just started happening so fast. The best word, and I think I've heard other people use this quite a bit recently, but the last 2 days before we stopped having school, canceled. I don't even know what you call it. The last 2 days before school ended were just really surreal. The day before, like I think it was Thursday the 12th, our girls basketball team was supposed to go to the state basketball tournament. And the night before, they heard they couldn't have parents and fans. And then they got to school the next day and we sent them off, and on the way up there, they were called and said, hey, we're not even going to have the state tournament. And by Friday, when they had announced there wasn't going to be any school for a while, we had students walking up at lunch just saying, hey, we're going to go home now. So it was just, it was pretty surreal.
You know, and I'd agree with that too. It was strange when they started talking about disinfecting the entire building. They especially were concerned about common areas, doorknobs, things that multiple people touch. And in my classroom, everybody shares art supplies. So I was starting to have almost a panic attack, just trying to figure out, how am I going to clean my room? How am I going to clean all of the stuff that everybody comes into contact with on a daily basis? Because I can't speak for Mickey, but my art room is an absolute wreck of just stuff all over the place. And
how many students do you have?
Well, I also teach graphic design. And with the addition of the other CTE courses that have been added into the curriculum at Warrenton, my numbers are a little lower this year. Normally, I would see about 150 kids on a daily basis. This year is more like 90.
30 or 25 or 30 per class?
Roughly.
Yeah, and
roughly.
What's a CTE?
Career tech, uh-huh. Essentially. So autos, welding, our fisheries program. And I am now the graphic design element of that. Mm-hmm. So we're building a field of study.
About the same number of students in your classes?
Yeah, sounds. I think I've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 140 or 50, which is same thing, 25 to 30-ish. Didn't seem overwhelming when they were all coming into class. Now that I'm trying to get a hold of all of them via phone and email, it seems a little bit more overwhelming.
Well, you know, there have been a few articles. There was one in the New York Times recently, and the Oregonian is doing some work on talking to students and teachers about how they're doing. In the Oregonian, one teacher did talk about how he or she, I've forgotten, is making home visits, going and knocking on doors. Are you doing any of that, or is it mostly phone calls? How are you connecting with your students?
My kids tend to be a little bit more tech savvy than, and frankly, I don't know how comfortable I would be, especially in this climate of pandemic, to be knocking on people's doors like that. Generally, what I do is I see how they're doing through the assignments I give them. One of the graphic design assignments I had, because we were just starting to work with photojournalism and digital imaging, I asked them how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted them.
What did they say? What did they do?
They took, I got a lot of images of kids doing distance learning at home. I got a lot of images of empty grocery store shelves. Mm-hmm. I got some really sweet images by one of my students, Emily, her mom making masks. Mm-hmm. So what I'd like to do is actually compile all of these images and take them right down to the Historical Society when the time comes, so that it can be added to their archive of our own living history. But when it comes to seeing how the kids are dealing with it, I think they're a lot more resilient than I would be in their situation.
Your class assignments are online, and I took a brief look, and I saw that for last Friday, May 8th, your assignment was looking out the window.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of images did you get from that?
Well, that was actually for the art kids.
Mm-hmm.
So what I asked them to do was, since it's actually drawing on a project that I asked them to do earlier, but didn't get a lot of response. But what I asked them to do was just sit in their room, sit in a room, draw the view outside, just like a studio study by Edvard Munch, I think.
They're taking pictures of what they have done, what they've produced, and sending them back to you?
Yes.
Is that what's going on?
Yeah. And that's, you know, so much of the grading that I would do in class is actually watching kids work, helping them when they're struggling, giving them advice on doing things. And it feels like, since I'm not there to witness so much of the process, I'm losing out quite a bit on what I'm trying to teach them, because all I have is the final product. And generally the grades that I give my students really happen while they're creating the work themselves.
You're interested in their process as much as the final mm-hmm. product?
So let's say, for example, I've got a kid who I've asked to do a self-portrait, and they're really struggling with proportions. But if, in terms of how I'm grading them, I am more inclined to give a higher grade to a kid who has struggled but is still giving it 100% every day. And it may not be perfect, but I know what it looked like when they started. I know what it looks like now, and I know what they've overcome. I'm much more likely to give that student a higher grade than somebody who gives me an absolutely photorealistic image, just because they've learned more, they've done more.
I see that your assignment for today is a faceless self-portrait,
mm-hmm.
and that would be very interesting. I'd love to see that, and it has a couple of meanings. I mean, it's faceless because you're not face-to-face with them, they're not face-to-face with you, and then also, I guess, it's a portrait without a particular face.
You know, and I can't take credit for that, because I was talking to a friend of mine, another artist, Laura Dessen,
mm-hmm.
who she had suggested that to me. And it's an assignment that I've used over time, especially because it helps me see where the kids are at mentally. Because I think one of the things that we have the opportunity to do, especially as art teachers, is we can kind of gauge where students are.
Yeah.
And that they can use their projects to actually come to terms with what we're going through at the moment. So it's not the first time I've done this project, but by asking kids to show me who they are without using their face, depending on what they turn in, I think that you can see quite a bit.
Mickey, you mm-hmm. are you teach photography, pottery, art, drawing, and design. Are you still teaching all of those things?
I don't have a photography class this semester. Mr. Fisher has taken over the digital photography stuff, but yeah, pottery, basic design, painting, yeah.
Are you following Brian's sort of schedule of once a week, here's the theme, and send me what you've done?
Not really anymore. The first probably 3 weeks of our remote learning stuff, when we were still feeling it out a little bit, that was kind of the protocol. Since then, after visiting with administration, essentially, we have come up with the standard of what it's going to take to to get a credit for each class. And I have those projects posted and explained and whatnot through different technology.
Let's take an Once example. Use one class and let's have an example.
For my pottery class, instead of having a weekly activity or a daily activity, there's three projects on there. One is a penny bank, building a penny bank sculpturally, and being able to cut it in half, hollow it out, put it back together. Another one is using slabs to create some sort of landmark around the world as a candle holder. And then the third one for that particular class, I'm drawing a blank on that one at the moment. Oh, nope, still drawing a blank. But as those go, our goal is to be as flexible as possible. And the daily activities, especially having my own kids, I find that they have a lot of work in some classes right now. And one of the things that I've heard from a lot of the high school students is that they don't have time every single day for the artwork. And I want to make it as flexible as possible for them. So if they have 2 hours or 3 hours at one time to sit down and do it, fantastic. If they want to work on it for 20 minutes a day, then they can work on it for 20 minutes a day. So.
But overall, what is the compliance?
You mean how are they going to show me their work?
Overall, are the students, turning their work in?
It's pretty hit and miss at the moment. I think we just finished an engagement survey with all the teachers. I mean, over 7 class periods, every single student, like how are they doing in first period, second period, third? So we're just starting to look at that as a whole, finding that some students are engaged all the way across the board, some students are disengaged all the way across the board, and some students have kind of picked and choosed where they're going to be engaged.
I totally agree with that.
It's interesting to see when you think they're not engaged at all or just ignoring everybody. They may be just ignoring you.
Interesting. Well, is that outside the norm, though?
Nope, not at all. Yeah. But you usually see other teachers, and you're usually, hey, Mr. Sparks, how's this student doing in your class right now? But we're not in the same building at all the same times right now. So,
do you engage with your colleagues, your teachers, your fellow teachers about students or any other activities now? Or are you all pretty much out on your own?
Well,
Brian.
In addition to having like Zoom faculty meetings, I've already reached out to a couple of my colleagues just to see how engagement has been going with their class with particular students. But to piggyback off what Mickey said, there are certain students who every time I put something in the Google Classroom, there's always an assignment waiting for me when I go to check. There are some kids that I haven't heard from since we left the schools, and then there are some kids who I hear from every now and then. Mm.
I believe that I read that every student will be given a D.
Our official stance, anyway.
Ours either.
No, I'm sorry, I don't mean that every student will, but that they will be given, nobody's going to fail.
They're, at the moment, what I think the official, I'm gonna answer this like I'm an official, but I'm not an official. I think the official ODE stance is that they can earn credit or they can be given an incomplete, and then they have to be given a pathway to success next fall if they don't do anything this spring. So it could be, I hope, I don't know how many students are going to listen to this, but I hope students, if you're listening to this, what that means is you have to do all of this work in the fall while you're doing other classes at the same time. You just will be given more time to do it. It's essentially giving them a grace period to get this accomplished, but it's not an automatic pass.
I think it's just a recognition more than anything of the times that we find ourselves in. I mean, one of the reasons why with the art classes that I've been giving assignments to, every assignment is essentially just a drawing at this point. Because what I'm concerned with is access to materials. What I've tried to do in my own way is to try and make those assignments as accessible as I possibly can, just for the benefit of the kids who don't have other things that they could be working with. Even though I feel like we're kind of going back to the fundamentals learning about perspective and even conceptual thinking and creative problem solving. Grading is a little bit of an adventure at the moment.
Are you getting feedback or uploads from your students every day and then giving them feedback, or is it once a week thing? How is that working?
It's completely hit and miss on my end. I don't know. It sounds like Brian's got some daily assignments, and I don't know. Like, when I was doing that, I wasn't getting daily feedback. Let's put it that way. The feedback that I was giving, it was really, I found it really frustrating, because part of my job is trying to be constructive and not make them feel badly about their artwork, but also try to help them bring it from point A to point B. And I'm finding that far more difficult via email than it is just face to face talking about, ooh, this is really good, now let's work on this part over here. It feels a little different doing that via technology.
I feel like I kind of got to set the record straight here for a second. I actually have not been giving my kids daily assignments. They're weekly. They have a week to do a single sketch, or frankly, take a single photograph in the case of the graphic design kids. So I do hear from them. I do hear from students from time to time. If they have an issue, they'll send me digital images and we'll just correspond through email. But for the most part, I'm kind of right up there with Mickey. It's one of those things where I don't want my class to be a source of stress, especially during this stressful time.
Right.
And it's already complicated and difficult enough to try and learn math essentially on your own, to do English on your own and science on your own without having the access, the constant access to the faculty in the classroom. So what I've tried to do is make my assignments more of just a breath of fresh air. Just a way for kids to kind of take a break and unplug.
So what were your students sent home with? Were they given Chromebooks or iPads or something? And then do they all have Wi-Fi? I mean, the library's closed, so they can't go there if they don't have it. Do you have any sense of how many students are just really plain out having trouble because they just don't have access to the basics that they need to communicate with you remotely? Brian?
Well, I can speak for what we did at Warrenton. Through the faculty and the administration, they made contact with every single family to ensure that there was at least some internet-capable device. They have lent out laptops. In terms of art materials, I actually made up packets for each one of my students that if they needed them, they would be waiting for them at the high school. I really think Mr. Hyatt and Mr. Johnish and Mr. O'Brien at Warrenton have done just about everything humanly possible to try and make this transition for these kids as easy as they could.
Yeah, I would concur. Like, I spend 4 or 5 hours first thing in the morning on the computer, and it's my eyes are going nuts, and I know my administrators are doing 10 times that much on the computer. Just, I mean, Zoom meetings probably from 8 in the morning until, or Google Hangouts. Sorry, I got to say Google Hangouts.
are you looking at your students' work? Are you, for those 4 or 5 hours, is that what you're doing?
I'd love to say yes, because that means I would be getting a lot of stuff back right now. But there's more coming in. Like today alone, I probably had 3 or 4 projects that I was really excited about getting. But it's starting to trickle in more. But since maybe a week or two ago, when I put out kind of the minimum for the rest of the semester, almost all of my computer time and phone time has been specifically contacting certain students. Just out of those 150, how many can I get a hold of today? And how many can I get a hold of today?
What was the process that you had to go through to learn how to do this remote teaching?
Well, it's not done yet. Still in process of learning how to do it.
It's very much a trial by fire, too.
Yeah. And I know Brian's familiar with Google Classroom, and I spent quite a few years doing digital photography, and it was set up through Google Classroom. So I'm relatively familiar with that part, but, you know, honestly, one of the biggest hang-up so far has been the students communicate via text and Snapchat most of the time, not via email.
Right.
And so our primary mode of communication has been through Google Classroom and email and whatnot. And that's not something that they check a lot. You know, some of them do, but as a group, they communicate in a different way. And so we've been told for years and years as administrators, or from administrators, you know, don't give out your number and don't, but we're now also being told, hey, communication is the number one thing right now, you know, getting, and so it's an interesting place to be in.
It's hard to know what is going to happen in September. I mean, we don't really know even what's going to happen next week, but what are the plans so far for school? Brian, like, I don't know.
I honestly, there's discussions about potential plans, mm-hmm. limiting class sizes, staggering start times, but really, I don't think we're in a position to even fathom it. I'm sure that there are discussions that are going on far above my pay grade, yeah. but as far as I know, to be perfectly frank, I just want to get through this school year first before I can even think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That,
probably.
Yeah.
The same thing
no,
everywhere.
It's exactly yeah. the same. I mean, I know I've heard just this past week from my administrator and my meeting with him was he's finally starting to think about next, maybe getting a hold of enough stuff now that he's finally starting to cross that bridge of putting some of those plans together, but I don't think even they're in a position to have any idea.
Well, let's turn to the Clatsop County High School Art Show that is mostly virtual, and you can find it on the Astoria Visual Arts website, which is astoriavisualarts.org. We have about 20 actual pieces on the wall on the window that faces 10th at Duane. Both have students who were involved in this show. Brian, I think you had some award winners.
Yeah, one of my students, Elena, received one of the Jurors Awards, and Mackenzie got Best in Show.
Congratulations.
Very proud of both of them.
Right. Did they work with you at all on this?
We had just started working on things before everything kind of got haywired. At first, when we paused, I thought we were going to be coming back in 2 weeks because essentially I thought it was just going to be an extended spring break.
That's what they said until just 2 minutes before they said it wasn't.
So it's funny that Mickey mentioned this earlier about it being a surreal time because that's actually what I was teaching my students before we actually left was we were talking about surrealism and symbolism and conceptual art and basically the intent behind things because there was no real theme for the AVA show. So I wanted them to be as creative as they possibly could, but I also wanted to give them just a little bit of structure.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any winners, Mickey?
Yeah, they're both Isabel and Isabella's. Isabel Talley was the best 2D piece, and Bella Atkinson had the best painting. They're both awesome pieces. And I think that's what I miss the most about being in class is just, I would imagine Brian would concur that like them at their creative best every day, they get to be in other classes and they might enjoy other classes, but having 50 minutes a day to just be creative and make and do and... It's fun. It was fun for me to walk up. I had to take a picture because it's fun for me to see their stuff again.
Yes. There are a lot of people who are talking about how they're enjoying this remote work. And some of the bigger companies, Google, Apple, and all that, have just told their employees they're not coming back until next year. But I have to suspect that an art teacher is one of those people like a musician. You really need your people with you. You need your audience, so to speak. And it just can't be the same to teach art via Google School. My engineering colleague, Ray Merritt, sent around a piece recently that had a link to something called QZium.com, like museum but with a C. And this group had apparently done a study using EEGs on people to determine whether they had a whether they had a different response to art, whether it was shown via augmented reality or virtual reality or reality. And their conclusion was that there's no difference in experiencing art in those ways. I don't believe that's true. Do you think that's possibly true?
I really hope not.
Yeah.
I really hope not.
Yeah.
I have not. Have you done any virtual reality, Brian? Have you ever?
No.
I haven't tried virtual reality. I know the by far the biggest difference, what I get with students, like face-to-face when I'm visiting with a student about artwork and showing them artwork, Google is amazing. I mean, you can see all sorts of stuff on there. What I remembered starting in 2001 and not being able to show them a lot of, but the sense of scale is not there. Like I can show them something on my computer screen, but when it's the size of a wall, it's a completely different feel, and I can't show them that on the computer screen. So I don't
scale and texture too.
Oh, absolutely,
it's just impossible,
absolutely.
Right? Yeah,
yeah. I completely agree with all of that. That the other thing that, and it's funny because I've been doing a lot of work in graphic and web design, but it seems almost sterile. Mm. You lose a lot of the warmth that the artwork itself has, even being taken out of the classroom itself. I mean, one of the best parts about teaching art is being able to help the kids help themselves and watch them bounce ideas off of each other. Mm. And art shouldn't really be made by just exclusively one person sitting in a room. I think that the camaraderie and the teamwork behind it is part of its beauty.
And one of the things that struck me a little bit today too, I was having this conversation with somebody, is that a lot of our, I don't know, higher achieving students, or maybe it's not just them, but a lot of achieving students, let's just say it that way, they go to school and they've got a dedicated 50 minutes a day to work on some art stuff that they don't have to think about their honors English class or their honors bio class. Right now, they're not doing as much of my artwork because they're getting so much stuff in those other classes, and they're not getting that 50 minutes a day of I get to do this now. And it's really a bummer on their, that's the synthesis of all that other stuff they're learning too. But when you don't have that 50 minutes of dedicated time, I know I don't do as much of my own artwork anymore because I've got so many other things going on. Well, they don't have that dedicated time to do that anymore. And that's really a bummer on their part. That's a bummer.
Mm. Well, gentlemen, we should wrap up here in just a minute or two. So let's hope that some students are listening. And what would you say to them? How would you guide them through the end of this year and into summer and come back in fall?
We only have a minute or two.
Take as long as you
no,
like.
No, I'm just kidding.
I would think when it comes to the time that we find ourselves in, Isaac Newton, Shakespeare, Edvard Munch, Boccaccio, they all made works that impacted who they became professionally as artists, as scientists, during times of quarantine, because they had this time to actually reflect and think. So even though we're not in the classroom, there's still an opportunity. There's still an opportunity to be incredibly creative, and that you shouldn't deny yourself that. But I will say, for any of the Warrenton students listening, I miss you guys every day, and I can't wait to see you.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest sentiment that I would relay to my Astorians. I'm going to send this out all over the place so you guys listen to it. But no, just, I love you guys, man, and definitely miss hanging around.
Mickey Terracino, Brian Vollner, thank you so much for being with us today, and good luck, and I hope everyone sees you in September in real life.
Yeah, thanks.
Us too. Thank you.
High school arts instructors Brian Vollner from Warrenton and Mickey Terracino from Astoria on Arts, Not Live But Still Local on Coast Community Radio. I'm Cindy Price. Coming up next, Astoria Library Director Jimmy Pearson. Thank you. Library Director Jimmy Pearson is not your standard librarian. Yes, he has master's degrees in public administration and in library science and headed up libraries in Texas and Colorado. But he's also a U.S. Army veteran, a combat medic who retired in 2012 after 20 years of service. Jimmy was the senior librarian in the Denver Public Library before being recruited to Astoria in October 2016. Jimmy Pearson, thanks so much for coming on Arts Live and Local today.
Hi, you're welcome. Good to see you.
Jimmy, you are the library director here in Astoria, and so what have you been doing since, I don't know, when did it close? Tell me
March
about the
16th.
Last, okay, tell me about that day.
So March 16th, the library closed. Within, by April 1st, I had furloughed six of my staff members. We have been working on major projects. For those, it's that time of year in spring and gardening. So in the library world, we actually call it weeding. So we have been going through the collection pretty much with a eye toward, is it damaged? Can it be fixed? Is it outdated? So we want to have the best and the greatest on the shelves. So we have literally been taking the collection through zero through all the way nine, children's as well, and going through it one by one almost. We're running reports. You know, we have the sophistication to be able to say what hasn't circulated in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And so we're making the decision whether or not to repair it, if it needs to be repaired, if it needs to go to the archives. There are some items that I've probably have transferred 30 or 40 of them to the archives. It's amazing what I'm still finding on the shelves after almost, 4 years of service in October. We have a book on the Finns in Astoria that it was brought to my attention. We have two copies, and they're worth anywhere from $450 to $800 apiece. One of them was on the shelves, and one of them's in a locked cabinet. So now they're both in a locked cabinet. I've been consistently keeping up with the data that's coming out of the governor's office, the CDC, and preparing for what it looks like to reopen at some point in the future.
What does that look like to you?
Actually, I'm still working on that plan, so I'm not going to have a whole lot of details, but pretty much libraries around the state, the country are taking hits economically. I know I will not probably have a full staff, and just making plans for what that looks like and how do we adjust? How do we serve the public? I've been responsible for people's lives for almost my entire adult life. In the Army from the very first day of my medic training, we were called out at one point to give blood because I'm O negative. You know, Korea in 1985, when I was in the field in a rural area, we were hundreds of miles away from definitive Western medical care. This is the first time in my life as a library director, I'm responsible for people's lives and I can't control the environment. It has been exhausting. I have to make sure that I protect my staff and I protect the customers and the patrons that are coming through the doors and figuring out how to do that and having some kind of normalcy. I mean, I know that we're all ready to go back. We all want to open. It's going to be incremental, as our mayor has said. This is a marathon. This is not a sprint. It's going to take time.
Do you foresee people checking out books anytime soon?
So there, we have had people calling and asking when we reopen. So there's been a lot of time in the library world at the Institute of Museum and Library Services out of Washington, D.C. There's been a lot of studies on how it interacts with paper. And we're pretty much reaching the point where we're comfortable saying, you know, the items that are coming in out of the book drop should be sequestered for 24 hours before they're back on the shelves. And we're planning for what that looks like. So how do we deliver services and have an environment that we maintain that some type of control over them? I don't know if I see a lot of people. I am myself at risk for complications as a diabetes type 2 patient. It's daunting to think about how you're interacting with your world at this time. We have really ramped up our social media presence. Amy Kreider is doing some Zoom meetings and writers groups, book clubs. She has found the feedback from that is sometimes it's socialization for the people that are isolated. The story times have been well received that Suzanne has been doing within that group and within that community. We are doing everything we can. And I took a call from a guy the other day and he seriously just wanted to talk. It was reaching out to another individual, a human being, to just say, hey, how are you?
Yeah. Well, one of the services that the library provides is internet access for, you know, a number of people who don't have it. I'm sure that's being missed quite a bit.
So our Wi-Fi is still on. It's still working. We've actually had a woman that, because of the law regarding deliverance of telehealth care, contacted me about 3 weeks ago, four weeks ago, and actually did a therapy session in our parking lot using our Wi-Fi. So that is still ongoing. We haven't turned it off. It's available to the public.
Are you going in every day?
So in the very beginning of this, I myself had a fever, of course, on March 20th. It had not resolved by the 22nd of March. So the first couple of weeks of this, I was at home isolating. Myself and Odom and Megan are going in during the day. We're working on those major projects.
Is there anything that you can talk to us about what you think your budget is going to be for the next year?
I think anybody with a budget in the city at this point needs to understand there's going to be some kind of, there's a prospect. I mean, I can't talk about the amount. I'm not the finance director. But again, all of us in libraries around Oregon, there probably will be cuts. I mean, you're working in a community that's not open, and you know, property tax doesn't usually come in until November. Transient lodging taxes, of course, will be delayed. And so there will be a hit.
Perhaps the only positive, real positive change that comes out of this is a real giant leap in technological intelligence amongst everyone, because they've just had to have it. In the library world, are there discussions about, I'm sure there are discussions about that, and there are any new whiz-bang ideas that are coming along to make libraries more virtually accessible?
We do that now, and we did it at the beginning as well. We're offering the ability to sign up for a library card remotely. So we have the OverDrive offerings, the ebooks, the audiobooks, the databases that are available. We've been working before all of this to get cards in the hands of Tongue Point students so they can have access to the resources when they're going through school out there. I think libraries have been trending toward that. I'd love to have a budget to be able to offer HUA or whatever it is. And streaming music for, you know, Denver Public, where I came from, does that. I don't have the budget for magazines, because magazines are really cool if you look at them on a device. On a tablet especially, they usually do some digital content that's not available in the print version. So, anything that we can do. But also, quite frankly, people still want books. I personally pretty much read nonfiction in hardcover form, and then for at night when I'm trying to wind down, I'll read it on a tablet and I'll read fiction.
3 months ago, where were you in the library renovation concept, and then where are you now?
So library renovation then, still putting together ideals and what does it look like, and now probably not going to revisit that for the next year or two. I mean, the reality is, we're going to put our community back together, and there's funding that needs to go other places. I mean, unless we found a magic, some donor to come out with a big pocket and make a, you know, write a check, you know, there are other priorities that need to happen. I will tell you of an exciting one, because you just said we haven't talked about it. We're waiting for tomorrow night, the Warrenton City Commission. They will be the final voting government body for the one card. 1 July, you'll be able to use your library card from Astoria, walk into Seaside, and check out an item. You'll be able to walk into Warrenton and check out an item. We have a courier system now in place that's Tuesdays and Thursdays. We've seen an uptick in demand from all the libraries going around. So basically, it's called the Northwest Library Cooperative. And it was supposed to go live on the 19th of April, which is my birthday, the beginning of National Library Week. But of course, we find ourselves, we have company now called COVID-19. So it has been slightly delayed, but that's a huge leap forward in library services for Clatsop County. Very excited, very proud of it. The citizens in Warrenton, Seaside, and Astoria pay taxes toward the upkeep of the libraries. It's our hope that people, maybe at some point they have tried in the past over decades to do a library district. We have a vision for library services in the county that we are pulling everybody in. there's a possibility in the future, in the coming years, that maybe there's a branch out in Napa, there's a branch in Jewell. I mean, there's already the physical structure in place if we worked with the schools.
At the Tillicum House, much has been going on inside with a skeleton staff of the station manager and one or two people. And it sounds like that's what you're doing at the library, too. You're taking this opportunity to basically clean house.
It has. It's been deep cleaned in the first couple of weeks following the closure. We've shampooed all of the carpets. Rick has actually been polishing the floors in the restroom. They look really nice. And any plan that we put in place to reopen will include the need to be able to do that. Socially distance, limit the people that are coming into the building, the number of people. I can say without a doubt that probably the very first couple phase or two, you'll be able to come in and get holds and leave.
Jimmy Pearson, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Ms. Price.
Stay safe. Stay well.
Stay 6 feet away from people.
Yes.
Wear a mask. It's a badge of honor. It's not a sign of weakness. You're taking care of your fellow person.
Thank you.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you. Talking with Astoria Library Director Jimmy Pearson inspired me to clean up some shelves at home. You can keep up with plans for reopening at astorialibrary.org. We'll be right back with the exuberant Marcin Pierce, artist. I'm Cindy Price for Arts, Not Live But Still Local, on Coast Community Radio. Marcin Pierce is a painter who's worked in various styles and mediums for nearly three decades. In 2017, he flipped a buffalo head nickel and landed in Astoria. Marcin is represented locally by the Secret Gallery and was selected as a Fall 2019 Astoria Visual Arts Artist in Residence. Originally from Mississippi, Marcin's works have been shown throughout the United States. Marcin Pierce, thanks for coming in today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Cindy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Where were you just before you got here?
I was down the street at the Secret Gallery with Chris. We were doing a podcast. He does a weekly podcast on Monday, artist to artist. And I think I was number four.
Chris who?
Chris Minnick.
Uh-huh.
The Secret Gallery. He's a writer as well in right. town, local writer, but Jill's partner in the Secret Gallery there, and that's where they show my art. So I'm in the show right now, the horse she rode in on, some other great artists, Hickory, Merchant, Colin Chalag, Kay Spear, Jill.
What do you have in the show?
Oh, Sambon. Oh, I have six pieces, all Western themed. They're a couple cowboys, a couple guys riding horses, you know, just a different versions of work. But that's just one right now. The Western theme show, I'm totally painting different stuff right now. Back onto the gas mask. Gas masks are everywhere at the moment. So I had to, it's crazy I'm back on. I thought I had abandoned them 2 years ago. I had the gas mask show.
Yes, you did.
And now it's come back around. So I see gas masks. You know, it's funny how that happened.
Are you doing ones in patterns and colors now? Or
well, I don't know. I've got a few that I'm working on that are still based. All the ones I've painted are based from World War II still. And they're all from England, the 40s. And I chose the people that weren't normally going to wear a gas mask as my subject matter. I tried to stay away from the military if I could, because you know they're engaged in war. So with where people are now, you're engaged in the mask for survival. So I was looking at it the same way back then. So that's what is 80 years down the road or 75 years down the road, we're faced with that same dilemma as a species, as you know, to stay alive. So I am using that as motivation for when I approach those. That series itself, to be like, wow, 75, 80 years later, we're doing the same thing, but in a different way.
So you've really been affected by this pandemic and the quarantine.
Oh, yeah. It's, well, the isolation side of it. I mean, one side for an artist, isolation is pretty good because you do more work. But I'm one of those artists that like to know the people that I'm doing the work for. So you miss all that social side. I mean, Art Walk is, to me, the best night of the whole month because we all get to see each other. There's brand new work to look at. It's a very good social experience for the artists, for anyone that comes out for that. It's something to look forward to. You've taken all that away. I mean, up until Jeff Daly just recently started showing the film, there was nothing in 2 months here. It was very, I mean, it was, scary. And now that just with the drive-in and people starting to finally be socially aware, the mask, the distance, I feel like we're starting to come to terms with the new normal, as everybody calls it. And I think as artists and as, you know, even with ABA as a very strong organization of Astoria, we have to find our place and to be able to move forward and know that what we're doing matters. So, and with, you know, with the work that we're doing, how we engage the public and grow from that, learn from that, and be respectful to others so that we can progress. Because to me, this little town is like, it's a great little society. You know, the artists, the people that live here. So we all, I feel like we watch each other's backs, right? So in doing that, we're engaged. You know, we're all engaged. We've taken out the social side, which is really what this town thrives on. I mean, the locals are, you know, we're one big family in a way. Definitely when you see each other as much as you do in a small town like this. So when you take that out, you know, some big hollow feeling left, you know, in its place. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this summer, especially with, I mean, this COVID thing is here for a while until they find a vaccine. So we're going to have to find a way to be able to socialize, to be able to check in on one another. And the arts play a role in that, you know, and I want to try any way I can to help make it possible.
Well, you have an idea for that.
Oh, yes, definitely. I feel like outside is the new inside. So, I was actually just, I keep refining this idea of outside is the new inside because there's a lot of empty space outside that you could fit, even with these new guidelines of social distancing and trying to really be respectful of that to where we don't. I mean, we keep all that contained, but we can still move forward. I mean, you look at other countries or other cities, they've done really well. So I say outside. Outside is safe. But I like the idea of an installation of art, you know, made by locals to be outside. But then I was refining the idea. I think we should do a Sing for Your Supper. So we also have, with an art installation, we have like a local band. I mean, this is one of the best towns for music, and there has been no music in this town for 2 months. There's plenty of locals that would love to sing a song. And you could place music and art in probably four corners of this town, spread out enough, or an open park, limited to X amount of people, 50, no more than so many. I mean, we're able to get between 75 to 100 people at a drive-in at a safe distance. And that's probably the one thing that people look forward to every week is to be able to go to that little moment because they get to see something. And that's, to me, doing things artistically is better than going to Walmart, you know, and shopping around for things you don't need. You know, I'd rather do things that the community does need and builds up the community spirit and allows people to get through this. And there's plenty, I also want, I think where we should initiate a graffiti police crew, and we go around and we repaint all these bad tags and bad graffiti in town. We just, a couple artists just go around with some paintbrushes and paint something pretty for people to look at. Andy Sterling and I just last Saturday painted a food truck for Brian at Rolling Bowl, and that was a great day to just paint something. And now, in just the last couple of days, so many people have come up to me and be like, thanks, we needed something new to look at, and they were walking by. That's what I like doing. I like being able to give back to the town. And there's plenty of great places that we could do something tasteful, something bright and beautiful. Other artists could be involved. And then that will stay. Those little pieces will stay and get us through this pandemic. And when we create art in a time like this, when it's okay for visitors to come back to Astoria, they have something new to look at. They have, and we have something more to be proud of. It's first for the locals, second for the visitors. Right now, it should be locals first because it's our small, tight-knit little community. I'm not one of, you know, don't rush the beach. Don't, you do all those things, it's going to be bad. You could take four places and have 50 people at four places. That's 200 people. You could cycle through, just like at Art Walk. I'm not seeing to do any of this now, but it's ideas to get through the summer. I mean, imagine when everybody does open back up and they're only allowed to open back up to 25% capacity. People are still going to come to this town. They're going to have to do something while they're waiting to go into a place. We facilitate the wait. Outdoor art installation, listen to some music, and go on your merry way. That's for locals. That's for anyone getting, you know, that comes here. They're going to come here regardless. I mean, I had originally thought of what it would be like to do something Memorial Day weekend, but I was on the governor's site this morning thinking about what would be, you know, this interview today, and I'm reading all the guidelines and, you know, the 10 people, household, all, I mean, there's so many things. Our county hasn't even been previewed yet. They have a list of all the counties in the state. We haven't even got there yet.
Right. Well, our county is submitting its plan sometime this week. So.
Sometime. So we'll have to, everything's under review. Yeah. I mean, I just think ideas to try to help along the way as an artist. Be like, what would it be like to do this? Mm-hmm. You know, and if we could do this without anyone, of course, safety first. You know, that should be primary. Summer is when we have the most visitors to the town. Sure. You know, winter, fall and winter, once it starts to raining again, I mean, everybody's going to go. I definitely feel like this fall and winter, they would have no reason to come because it could be more susceptible during the fall and winter for a second wave. So I feel like our identity and everything that we are during the summer is good for people to remember by, get through. You know, I think this identity of being a real artistic town is nice. I like that people can come in to see galleries. I mean, the gallery we're in right now doing this, it's beautiful. You know, to be able to see art on walls. But that's why I love the whole idea of pushing art to all the windows. You know, you could flood all the closed businesses right now with art, and you could just still walk the sidewalks and have something different to look at. It doesn't cost a dime to open the door and put a painting in the window. Nothing. And then that artist, that may be their first show. They've never shown something before, but now they get something. That's a pride in your own work. And that could be the one little thing that artist needs to be better. And I think you could do that easily. I know somebody like Ray would love to be behind that because that gives what we're all here for. You know, I mean, when you're an artist, a part of a small community, you should try to always do the best you can.
How are we going to see your work and the others at the Secret Gallery?
Well, everything right now online, the Secret Gallery online, they did a virtual tour with all the virtual openings right now. I mean, I have Class and I Bloom. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be April show, and that's postponed. And I'm excited about that show as well because that's a good body of work I've been working on for a few months, and it's on hold. I want to wait until people are allowed to come back to the galleries because, you know, I know it's crowd is a bad word to say, but I like a crowd at an opening. That's just fun. So I don't know. I mean, I would definitely want to have the shows come back, but it's not going to be this. I guess it'll feel the same, but it won't be the same. So for the time being, I'm just going to keep painting. I'm starting to do. I have stuff at Jimbo's, at Bistro. I have some windows at Maritime. So one at the bike shop with Scott. So I'm going to keep putting more public art. I'm about to paint Helmut John 10 foot tall. And I'm taking him down. I'm about to paint Helmut John 10 foot tall and take him down to the drive-in parking lot. And I'm just going to chain it up to there. And it's going to be public art number one. It's going to be Helmut John. And that's actually... It's going to happen this week. I've already been I have from one of my own photos because I talk to John every day. He's actually a friend. I like Helmut John. So I'm painting him. And also on the other side of the food truck, I'll be painting Charlie that passed here the last few weeks. I'm painting him coming up. I'm going to start the public art that I do that you'll see pop up around town. It's going to be people of the town and the people that have, that to me, mean a lot to the town. And I'm just going to keep putting them up. You'll see them and be like, oh, that must be another Morse and just popped up somewhere. And so little by little, you'll see more. And I just think art is going to be fun. You know, like, we have no reason not to be fun for each other right now during this time. You know, this is the funnest place. I could be anywhere on the world, anywhere on the planet right now, and I choose to be in Astoria because I love this town. You know, this town is the most special place to me, and I'm glad to be a part of what goes on here. It feels, every day feels right. Even during this, every day feels right. So I feel like we'll make it, we'll get through it, you know, we'll all be better for it. But, you know, I'm glad to be here, I'm glad to be, like, know you as a friend, Ray as a friend, Lisa, all the people. I feel like once we get through it at the other end, we'll have one big party. You know, probably be a lot of dancing in the streets. Yeah, you know, so I look forward to that day.
Me too. And meanwhile, thank you so much for coming on to Arts Live and Local, Morrison.
Of course. Thanks, Cindy.
Artist and a little bit of a philosopher, Morrison Pierce. You know, I almost don't care what he says. I just love listening to him talk. Some of Morrison's latest works are included in the Secret Gallery's current exhibit, The Horse I Rode In On. You can find that at thesecret.gallery.
Be run off the road to the river, flowers splash. As the crowds arrive, fashionably late. To turn the key, turn the page, they won't wait. You've come to nowhere, home alone. Like a lonely verse without its song. When the crowds arrive,
many thanks to Brian Vollner, Mickey Cherugino, Jimmy Pearson, and Morrison Pierce for making this week's Arts Not Live But Still Local. Thanks also to Ray Merritt for his engineering assistance and to Astoria Visual Arts for making its gallery available for recording. Bumper music this week by Horse Feathers from their album Appreciation. This week's program was recorded on Monday, May 11th at the AVA Gallery in Astoria. Check the community calendar at coastradio.org for up-to-date happenings. I'm Cindy Price, sitting in for Carol Newman, who will return when the Tillicum House is opened for live broadcasts and when she feels safe, because that's really the bottom line of the reopening of our communities. If you're not ready to go somewhere, it's okay, don't go. Your friends and neighbors are still here to help. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Stay well. Song.